What are your favorite type of crisps?
Favorite type of crisps. Now, for the listeners out there, so in the UK you call them crisps. Over here we call them chips, right? So, because over there chips are actual French fries over there. I am cultured and I know these things. Favorite crisps: Funyuns, Cool Ranch Doritos. It's pretty boring, actually. I don't know. I'm kind of a Doritos nut. They have over here in the States, they have a spicy barbecue flavor that's unbelievable. And I know over there, I really enjoy the, I think it's the paprika flavored.
There's the chili heat wave. I don't know if that's the one. I don't know if there's
That might be the
paprika.
one.
They're very like red packaging. Might be.
Yes.
Yeah, they're good.
Those are very good as well. But I'm an old school Funyun guy. The Funyuns for me are anytime, anywhere, any place. Like it's I just love Funyuns. Funyuns and Doritos. There you go.
The Funyun never stops. Yeah, I've never had Funyuns.
What?
I feel like it's a very
Oh.
what's the word? Location specific thing. It's like how you guys have like the world. I don't know what you call the NFL. Like it's always like the world something. It's like no one else in the world plays like. Well, I see it as American football, right?
Right.
Yeah, I feel like it's very localized. Like we have. Have you heard of like kettle chips?
Oh yeah, of
Oh,
course.
you know.
Yeah,
Oh, okay. I thought they
we
were
have
kind
those.
of a very
Yeah,
UK
yeah.
thing. Oh, okay.
No, those are all over here. They're very
Oh.
huge over here and they're delicious as well.
That's what I'd go with, yeah. Them or Tyrrells. Do you know them?
Yes. Yes, I
I
do.
didn't think
Those are
these
good too.
were. Go on.
Well, I mean, I've just done a lot of touring over there, so like
True.
All the truck stops and stuff, like we would just try stuff. Like we would get bags of stuff and like, oh no, that's good. Oh, here, try this. And like, but kettle chips in particular, the sea salt and the way they do the jalapeno,
Yeah.
all the kettle stuff is really, really high quality.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
Yeah.
good. That's a good pick. Good
Yeah.
question.
Did you try any of the sort of traditionally the kind of Brit, because Britain is not, well, it is known for its food being bland and boring.
Yeah,
Did you try anything like pork pies or like any of that crap?
not the pork pies. I am a big fan of your guys' standard breakfast, the eggs and the sausage and the beans and like that is amazing. When it's done right, it's really, really awesome. But
Yeah.
no, what's the other guys liked? What are the things that you get? You literally get them everywhere. It looks like a little pouch of, it's like a pouch of meat.
What, like pepperoni, pepperami type thing?
No. It'd be like a pot pie in like a, not in a croissant, but in like a calzone looking thing. You know what I
What,
mean?
like a sausage roll, like steak bake kind of thing, somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I don't
What are
know.
those called? It's like Dave's or something, or it's called like a, there's little
Oh.
stands that have them. Do
Oh no,
you know what I mean?
Dave's.
It's like a blue package, and you can pick which one you want, and they heat it up for you.
Oh, do you mean Greg's?
Greg's. Greg's.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry, it was the name of a guy. I don't know.
I
Greg's.
was really trying to piece that together, man. Yeah, I was really clutching it. I was like, and then I just went, "Oh, it's a name. It could be great." Because yeah, I know what you mean. Sorry, I thought you meant just something you find in like on the counter, you know, or in the shelves. It's like,
No.
oh yeah, Greg's is good. Yeah, I
I
was.
just I'm not I tried to like it. It wasn't for me. It was just too much of everything in a, it just wasn't, I don't know, I was never in the mood for it. But the rest of the guys used to freak out when they saw a Greg's. And
Have you seen the American girl going, "I'm outside GR eggs," you know, that's
Yeah, I have. Yeah. That's
yeah,
pretty good.
it's a very northern England, north of England thing. You don't see many Greggs below in the sort of London,
No,
Wales
it was
near.
always when we were en route to like Glasgow or something, or
yeah
way up there. And
yeah 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 I'm sure
Greg's. Shout out to Greg's.
I had one more. Yeah, so actually, speaking of, so with American food, because I've never been over.
Come over.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. It's part of the plan at some point. Yeah, it's obviously money, unfortunately, is a hindrance. Sure.
It's very expensive.
Money is a hindrance is a very roundabout way of saying you haven't got any, isn't it? how do you compare the food? Like, because I know there's a lot of extra stuff that gets pumped into some of the food over your way.
Yeah.
More so maybe than over here. So I know the stereotype is people complaining that British food doesn't taste very much, but I do feel like it's on the whole quite healthy if you want it to be, if you pick the right stuff, you know.
No, that's true. You know, it is pretty ironic though, like, you know, the British have spent their entire history taking over the rest of the world for spices and foods and stuff, and then their food now is not, it's like, you know, World War II rationed or something like that, but they don't have the chemicalness that the American food has, and that's good and bad. So when we're over there, I can go to Taco Bell and you guys don't even have half the stuff that is in our Taco Bell. Like you don't have refried beans. You have black beans. You have, you know, you can't get Cheese Whiz over there. Not that I want to eat Cheese Whiz, but, all of the spices and the seasoning on everything over here, you guys simply just don't have, which is cool for the first week. And then after the first week on tour, you're just like, I would give anything to have just a really shitty burrito, but I can't get that. Like, it has to be all like, there's a minimum quality that you guys do have, which I respect, but sometimes I just want the crappy, you know, it just hits right. Like hangover food, I guess.
Yeah, I always find when we're going way more of a food tangent than I thought, but I'm here for it. It's great.
It's fun. Yeah,
I find if I suppose it's the right time of day for you, food wise.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
I had a grand sum of like 3 pints of beer last night, and you know sometimes those mornings where, or like the days where you just feel like those 3 pints just have gone to every part of your body, and like you're like how I didn't even, you know. And yes. Then I had sushi earlier and I was like, that's not as smart. None of that was smart.
sushi with beer?
No, not at the same time. I was like, I'll be healthy. And then, you know, I couldn't be asked to make anything. So it's all just kind of mixing at the moment. But the thing you mentioned, English breakfast, I cannot have that on a hangover. Every single Brit seems to love it, but it just makes me feel ill. I just can't. It tastes great. I remember I went to a place that won an award for the best English breakfast like a few years in a row.
Ooh.
I had one bite because I was really hungover. I had one bite and I was looking at it and as you know, the little smells of the restaurant and I was just sat there like, I just can't. So I had to sort of push it to a side and just sort of sit sadly in my chair. But that was in Liverpool, I believe. I don't know if you were there on your last tour.
Yeah, we were.
Nice, nice. What I wanted to kind of ask, sort of regarding the sort of dragged under situation with the sort of I always find with like life changes and stuff, I never know how much to be excited versus a bit scared of being in a sort of new situation. And now that you kind of moved on from that, do you have where's kind of your head at in terms of how you deal with putting yourself in a new sort of situation? Like, because I know for me, sometimes I feel excitement at like, yes, a new chapter of life. And other times I'm like, oh, what am I doing now? Kind of thing, you know?
For me, it's, I don't know. My first feeling is I'm excited to be home to do the things I could never do. And my family's excited to have me around to do all the things. And I'm talking like, just the most simplest things. Hey, you want to go catch a movie this weekend? Hey, do you want to, you know, go to this birthday party, or it's my birthday? Do you want to go out to dinner, or, you know, see my daughter on a regular basis? Like, I didn't ever have those things in the last five, six years. And, you know, I was gone 6 months last year, and that's tough for everyone around you, but that's your support system, right? So, being home is cool. And I really feel like I went and did the thing. Cause, you know, I set out to do the thing and I wanted to sign the record deal and I wanted to have the publishing deal and I wanted to go play the big giant European festivals. Like that was the dream. And I did that. And so now it's okay to be home. I'm not sitting at home going, oh, I just wish I would have done this. Like, I have no more things to cross off my list musically as far as, like, you know, achievements I wanted to achieve. And my barometer was, would 16-year-old me be stoked of what I've done? And the answer is, yeah, he would be amazing. Or he would be amazingly stoked and grateful, and his head would probably explode if he knew what I was going to be doing all these years later. But yeah, no, it's all good. I just want to mix records, and, you know, touring's fun and stuff, but we do it for the memories, not the money. And it's, you know, you never, there's no money in music anyway. So, you know, being home and stable and available for the people that you love is not a bad thing.
I think there's a sort of an interesting, what's the word? Sort of, but I don't know whether misconception is the word, but I find it interesting how hearing people talk on the podcast, particularly people that have achieved a lot of the stuff they want to do, or you know, 16-year-old them or even younger dreamt of doing.
Yeah.
It always comes back to the importance of, like, sort of connections and family and everything. And where do you think the space for that kind of balancing what you want to achieve for you, where do you feel like that you balance that, you know? I think I'm trying to find the best way to sort of phrase this, but, like, I don't want to be so driven by a desire to achieve things all the time. I know it's kind of you know, you want to be driven, right? You want that intrinsic drive to do stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel like when you're pushed by, oh, I need to play this gig or I need to do this thing, rather than that just intrinsic motivation to do something, I'm trying to sort of find more motivation within myself to do things. And that way I like to think you can be more reliant on your own kind of drive to do it. And how much merit do you think you should place as an individual on the, I don't want to say material goals, but, like, you know, things like playing that festival, doing that, you know, signing that record deal or whatever, how much merit do you think mentally you should place on that versus the, you know, more intrinsic kind of goals that you might have?
You know, the fact of the matter is, it's a big world. And if you are not going to give 150% to that thing that you want, whether that's a YouTube channel or a touring career or a successful podcast, there is 100,000 other people and bands that are willing to give 151%. It's really about who you know. It's so much chance, and it's so much small opportunity based things. And it's about being tenacious. And so you do have to decide to skip the birthday parties, to skip. I mean, you know, I wanted that so bad. The day my mom died, I went to rehearsal. Like, that's the kind of thing that it takes, because we were going on a US tour with The Used 2 days later. Like, we had to rehearse that last time to get the set locked. And, you know, my fucking mom died and I still showed up to rehearsal. Like, that's how bad you have to want it. Do I regret that now? Maybe a little bit, but, you know, you got to do what your heart wants. And so a lot of times, you know, I see people getting in their own way of, well, I should want this, and, like, I feel obligated, so I'm not going to do it. Just decide what you want to do. Like, it's not that complicated, but it's also, you have to be very black and white about it. So, you know, if you want to go and do the thing, you better go and do the thing, but there's no half-assing it. Which is tough, because we're raised in a kind of a culture of just be you, be, you know, just, it's okay. Like, no, you have to actually be willing to basically cut your arm off for the thing that you want to do, whatever that is. Like, because it's just a crowd. It's just so crowded out there. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you do have to give literally everything to do and achieve what you want to do. And I could say the same for my YouTube channel. the video stuff and all the stuff outside of the things I did with the band. Yeah, it takes sacrifice, actual hard sacrifice. And, but that's okay. Like, you get the thing, and if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. I mean, you know, we get one shot at this thing, so.
Do you think if,
let's do it.
Yeah. Where do you think, you know, where do you think it, obviously, like you said, now that you've kind of done these, sort of got these kind of career goals, I don't say out of the way, but you've achieved some of these things that you kind of dreamt of doing. Like, not to put a sort of negative spin on it, but where do you think your head would be at had, you know, obviously I know you've got so many things going on in life, so it's not like, you know, the band was like this one thing that you're doing, obviously. But say that hadn't kind of, the band just maybe hadn't come about or whatever, for whatever reason, you hadn't done all of these sort of more performance-based pursuits. Where do you think your head would be at now? Would you still be driving like the YouTube channel and the mixing and all that stuff? Or would you need that kind of outlet somewhere else in a sort of more performance-based space?
I would probably be trying to scratch that itch of the live thing and the tour thing, because that whole thing stemmed from me totally failing at it when I originally tried it in, you know, I was a 25-year-old kid in 2005. I'd moved down to California. I recorded a record at Sound City. And after we got done recording the record, the band broke up. And I always felt like that was such a missed opportunity. And looking back now, that was never going to work. But, you know, as a kid, you think and assume and you hope that your bandmates are in it to win it as much as you are, when that was never the case when I was a kid. I also didn't have the communication tools to properly vet and find quality bandmates that wanted to, and were willing to sacrifice everything as I was to go and do the dream. And it wasn't about achieving it. It was just to know that you did everything you could. And I think all of that was always in the back of my mind of like, man, I just want to go and I want to know what it's like to be so exhausted from touring so long. And I want those experiences. And so that was the itch that I wanted to scratch all the way back when Rest Repose started, you know, Jared Dines and stuff. And we did a lot of touring in that band as well, but we never got out of the country or anything like that. But, and it was all completely DIY. So, I would probably still try to scratch that itch, honestly, if DU had never done anything, to be honest. But it all happened so fast, and it was pretty weird, wild. So yeah, I'd probably still try to do the live thing if I hadn't done what I've done.
Hmm. Do you ever kind of, you talked about being sort of exhausted with, you know, almost wanting that kind of, that, you know, sort of chasing after that in some sort of way. Do you think you can ever truly be exhausted if you're doing what you're passionate about? Do you think that would qualify as exhaustion, if you want? Because I know I could sit for ages working on something if it's something that I'm excited about. And I'd be tired, but I don't know if I would,
Totally.
Do you think you can, that kind of real burnout type exhaustion, that to the point of sort of like, do I even want to do this kind of thing? Do you think you can get that if you're truly passionate about something? Or is it a case of nothing?
Temporarily, situationally, you certainly can. I mean, it's really easy. So it's always a combination of things, right? It's always, you know, it's the 14, it begins with the 14-hour flight. It starts with the 8 hours of jet lag. It starts with, I haven't eaten in 12 hours. The bed that I got to sleep on was horrible and now my neck is all locked up. Like, it's all of those things. And then you have to endure those things for a month. Yeah, you get pretty exhausted. Like, yeah, you love being on stage. But then at some point, that 45 minutes on stage is really, really heavy. But at some point, all the other things start outweighing it. And it's not that you ever get sick of playing, because that's not it. It's you get tired of dealing with everything else that it takes to get to the stage. And so then you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I don't even care. I'm playing to 12,000 people tonight. Like, I am so out of my mind, tired, exhausted. I'm hungry. My fingernail is literally shredded off down past the nail bed because of my strings, and I've been on tour for 2 months. I have to super glue my finger and encase it in super glue only to shave it off over the course of the show. Every single night, I can't even use my pointer finger to grab my phone. It hurts so bad. Like, you want to just go home and get some sleep and Uber Eats your favorite food and see your girlfriend and play with your dog. Like that's what tour's like. And that's cool at first. For the first few years, you're like, this is awesome. I shredded my finger, man. And then after a while, you're just like, yeah, I don't care. Yeah. So yeah, you can temporarily get tired. You never get tired of playing though. Like, if you're a lifer at anything you do, like, I love video and I love editing video. I'll never get tired of that. However, I've edited video for 12 straight hours before and cramped up my hand, and that sucks. And, you know,
yeah,
but, you know, you've been there. Like, you know, you've gone long. I'm sure you've gone long hours editing podcasts and audio, and just all you go to sleep and all you see is waveforms. And like,
yeah,
it doesn't mean you're sick of it, but like, a break's good.
Yeah. I kind of have a weird, my sort of pursuits are quite, so I'm a musician as well. I'm a guitar. Well, you can see my guitar is right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's actually a bit of everything I do. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely gone, had done a day where it's been like, I'll do a podcast. My day's all over the place. I teach guitar for, you know, as my job. So I'll be like, do a podcast, and then I'll teach a bit of guitar, then I'll have some lunch, and then I'll play some guitar, and then I'll do another lesson and do another. And it's just like, my day's so scattered, and I'm trying to just get to a place where I can control my schedule a bit better, because it does make it difficult when you're just doing so much stuff. But with what you're kind of doing now, with regard to the kind of the more gear and engineering and production side of things, do you feel like there's a type of personality that leans more towards that over someone that leans towards the more, you know, performance or writing based kind of thing? And also, obviously, you've kind of done both, so do you feel like you maybe have some, are you somewhere in the middle on that spectrum, if there is one?
I think I am right smack in the middle. There are other people, I mean, we've worked, you know, the band over the years worked with a lot of people who are absolute savants and, you know, brilliant, fearless songwriters. Because when it comes to songwriting, you know, I'm always second guessing myself, or is this cool, or is this not cool? And then you bring in someone who is completely fearless with a guitar in their hands, and they're willing to try anything. They're not worried about genre. They're not worried about what it's going to sound like in relation to the other songs you have. But then more often than not, they can't hold a conversation, or, you know, they have a hard time ordering a meal. Or if they see a camera, they freeze up, you know, something like that. Like, there's always trade-offs. And so, but then you have the other real technically minded folks who I am also dear friends with that are so obsessed with frequencies and, you know, vintage tape saturation algorithms and stuff like that, who don't write songs. I don't know. Like, there, I understand and get both of those personality types. And I do consider myself somewhere in the middle, because I am not a fearless songwriter, but I am also not, I don't obsess over, you know, a particular band of frequencies that my cymbals are hitting. Like, it just doesn't sound good, or does it not sound good? Cool. Let's move on. Like, that's, I try to be kind of distanced from that a little bit. Yeah. I'm in the middle somewhere. Mm. I don't know which side though.
Are there any sort of, you talk about trade-offs and stuff, are there any like trade-offs that you are quite consciously aware that you've had to make? And I mean, not, I know we talked about having to sort of sacrifice things in a more career sense, but more in the, you know, balancing the different things you have within your career. So not, I'm not talking about family and stuff, but do you feel like there are any trade-offs that you are quite conscious, like, oh, okay, I kind of suck at this, but I know I suck at this because I'm good at that thing?
Yeah, there's, I mean, well, that was actually the big breakthrough for me with, like, you know, the YouTube stuff. Like, I was just conscious of, this is not going to be great, and I'm going to learn on how to make this better in the very, very beginning. I have been conscious of, so when I would go, when you go on tour and you have a busy YouTube channel, you can bank videos ahead of time and make them ahead of time for posting when you're gone to a point. But when you're on tour for 6 months, I think the longest stretch we did without coming home was 3 months. And trying to make videos on the road sounds like a great idea at, you know, before you leave in the comfort of your home. But when you're actually, like, exhausted and you've been driving till 4 in the morning, you don't feel like making videos, and you certainly don't feel like editing videos in a moving van that's doing this and going over speed bumps. Like, you don't want to do it. I was pretty conscious of, every time I would go on tour, all of my YouTube stuff and all of my socials would just go down the drain because of lack of activity, engagement. I don't have the time to sit there and upkeep it like I would at home. And so, like, that was a huge shortcoming that I was always trying to get over, whether it was hiring outside editors to edit stuff and upload directly while I'm gone, or other people posting videos on my stuff. Like, I don't know. I tried it all over the years, but that was a lot of trade-offs as far as time-wise. As far as actual conscious of, I suck at this, but, you know, it's because I'm good at that. I mean, in the beginning, it was mixing audio. Like, cool, I understand the fundamentals of video and lighting and stuff, but, man, my stuff doesn't sound great at all. That's just, you know, you can only do 100% of one thing at a time. So, you know, yeah, everyone gets better, but, you know, just one of those things. You get better over time, I guess.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that I, speaking of trade-offs, I think the one thing I think is quite interesting to sort of consider, and I don't know what the sort of answer to it is, or I don't know if there is an answer necessarily, but obviously as a musician now, you can do, there's so much you can do, you know, there's so many avenues you can pursue, you know, even just as a creative musician who wants to write songs, there's so many other things you can, you know, you can branch. I can do this podcast. I can also, you know, have a YouTube channel. I could do, I could try and become an engineer. That would take me a lot. I'm way off of that stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of choices you can make to do this stuff. But then I think the problem is that, I think that also kind of means that you almost have to do all of that stuff to stand a chance, even if you're an amazing songwriter or an amazing conversationalist. Or I feel like it's not just enough to be amazing at one thing now, which I think is sad, because there are a lot of people, I know a lot of people that are amazing at one thing, but I don't know if that...
absolutely.
Like, I have loads, I mean, I have loads of friends who, you know, they're great people, and they're great, like, they're such great, I don't say people-peoples, people-pleasers, but in a good way. Yeah. But I feel like they're not sort of career-minded. So those, I don't want to call them skills. It sounds very sterile, but, like, it is a skill, and it doesn't really get put to use because they just don't have that kind of career mindset. And I feel like you have to have so many things nowadays. Do you feel like the sort of the way the world is for musicians, do you think it's good having all these avenues now, or do you think there's some, I don't know, do you think there's a way we should maybe find out how to harness some of the people that are just good at that one thing?
Ultimately, I think it's a good thing to diversify your skill set. Now it's a totally different world, especially in, like, the YouTube creator space now than when I started. And no one would care about my channel if I started now. No one, like, I know that. But back in 2010, your camera quality didn't have to be that great. Your sound quality didn't have to be that great. You didn't have to worry about thumbnails. Those weren't even a thing, right? Like, but you do have to stand above the rest. And I remember consciously looking at the people that I really looked up to, Rob Chappers, Ola England, Keith Marrow. Those guys were insane guitar players, insane riff writers. But I could be better at them with my camera techniques and my lighting, but I could also learn how to talk to a camera better than any of those guys, in my mind, right? So that was going to be the thing I'm not saying I am, but I kind of am. I was like, okay, I'm going to learn how to talk to a camera, because when you talk to a camera, you're talking to this dead thing. There's no emoting. There's nothing to react off of as if you were talking to a person. So back then, there was this space to improve. And then over the years, it was, oh, okay, now the camera quality has to be better. Now I got to get something other than my, you know, $60 flip camera. And okay, so now I'm going to get some lights. And now I'm going to get, like, the production quality gradually went up over the years. But now someone coming into the space, you know, you have to know lighting, you have to know camera techniques, you have to know audio techniques in order to capture yourself properly. And not talking about the guitar playing, I'm talking about the voice and the microphone placement. And you literally do have to be a jack of all trades just to get to the entry level where people will take you seriously. And that has turned out to be really fruitful for me, because, you know, on one hand, right now I'm working on an in-ear rig for the used, but then I'm also talking to, you know, Ghost Inside about doing video work for their festival shows. Like, two wildly different things, but clearly they know I can do both because of the nature of what I do every day on YouTube. So ultimately that's good. But of course, I know guys who can play note perfect Yngwie Malmsteen solos while chewing bubblegum and reciting poetry, but they cannot tell you what strings they use. No idea. Don't care. I don't know. I use the pink ones. Whatever are the Ernie Ball pink ones. I don't know. And I'm like, how do you not know what strings you use? I don't know. What is the thing called again? Is this called the pickup? Oh, it's called the pickup. Cool. I'm not even kidding. Like, I know guys like that who do one thing better than I will ever even imagine. But they don't know what a tuning key is called. So I don't know. I'd rather, for my money, I'd rather be a jack of all trades, master of none.
No,
but that's just me.
Yeah, no, it's a cool place to be. I think there's definitely a place for that nowadays. I think the thing as well is, you speak of the guys who, you know, don't know necessarily their gear or know much beyond what they're just good at. And how do you kind of, you know, as a gearhead, how do you think, what would be your solution to finding the middle ground of understanding what will sort of deliver the tone and essentially the voice that you want to present, whatever instrument it is you're using? How do you balance searching for that versus just kind of working with the tone that you naturally produce as a musician? Because I know I could spend ages flicking dials and things and adjusting mic placements, or you know, that's as a guitarist, but drummers, there's all sorts of different snares and different setups and different things you can, you know. How do you kind of balance finding your own voice just through your playing versus your voice on the gear side of things without just procrastinating forever?
I mean, for me, I always try to live by, you know, it doesn't matter if you do the greatest thing ever if no one ever hears or sees it, right? So ultimately, you have to find a threshold of, yes, I could sit here and dial in this guitar tone, changing. I could spend 3 days trying different boost pedals that I have with this amplifier. However, you know, at some point, the return of investment is so small that, you know, you just got to get on with it. I have gone that other way of, you know, especially in the video space, I'm going to spend a week really dialing in this video, getting the information correct, getting the shots correct, getting the lighting correct, getting the sound correct. No one cares. Ultimately, I would put in a week for a single video. No one cares and no one would watch it. And then I would put out a stupid cheapest guitar on Amazon video and the thing gets 2 million views that I made in 4 hours. And so, you know, the audience in that way for me kind of dictates how much time I'm going to put into something, whether that's a new unreleased DVH amp or an overdrive pedal or a new guitar. Like, I am not going to spend more than a couple of hours on that video. I'm just not. I refuse to, because it doesn't matter because you as a viewer don't care how much time I spent on a video. You just care about the video and the content that you are watching and consuming. And if it's the thing that you want to see that you chose to click on, you don't care how long it took me to make that video. So I have to find the threshold of how long it takes me to find, or how long it takes me to make the video. So that's the balance that you have to strike, I guess. Mm. You don't get lost in the forest though. That's, it's easy to do in the procrastination, but I've just never been that kind of guy to just sit there and like, just not get anything done. We all have those friends though. That like, yeah, dude, I've been working on this EP. I've been working on this record. It's going to be so sick. And you're like, dude, it's been 2 years. Like, just put it out. You're like, no, I'm almost done though. It's almost done. I'm going to go back and re-record everything I did last year. I think it just could be a little bit better. Just like, dude, just put it out. It's fine. Move on to the next thing.
You're making me uncomfortable in my chair because I'm a bit guilty of that at the moment. Not exactly that. You know, not quite that. But, you know, I can totally resonate with the finding like allocation of time. Because part of why I wanted to do a podcast was I wanted to do something where I get to meet people and build a platform around. And I like talking to people. So it's, you know, but also It's quite minimal effort on the editing front, really. You know, in terms of just getting the podcast, I can actually, the finished product I can probably put together in like 10 minutes just from, well, it depends how many things I've got going on, but
of course.
But then it's also doing the clips and the timestamps and everything. That's what takes a bit longer. But for me, I was like, I want to be able to get the most out of my time with a skill I feel I have. And that's what drove me towards it, above and beyond just like the musical stuff. Cause like, I want to try and build something, you know, I'd have, as much as it'd be great if I could just DM you without the podcast and just be like, hi, do you want to chat? And you just be like, no. Well, I mean, no offense, politely, but like, you know, who are you? Like, you would know who I am. So, and so I like having that really great excuse, basically, just to meet loads of people. And it doesn't feel like networking, if you know what I mean. It feels like I'm just...
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of... Well, what I was going to ask was, when it comes to your content creation, do you find a sort of intrinsic purpose for you in finding what the audience wants and delivering that? Or are you more interested in doing exactly what you want? And if the audience likes it, the audience likes it. Where are you on the kind of, on that?
I think a lot of my peers would love to sit on and die on the hill of, I do what I want only, and I don't care. I don't care if, you know, I don't care who watches it. I think that is a complete lie as a human being, because, and that is true in the beginning. When no one's watching you, you literally have nothing to lose, right? Now, YouTube literally pays my mortgage. So I would be lying if I said I didn't think a little bit about, okay, I wonder if they're going to like this. Not necessarily if they're going to like this, but maybe I should word this to be a little bit more broad, or maybe I should also think about, you know, because at this point, it's been doing this over a decade. Okay, I can see in the comments, how come you didn't try the amplifier with a boost, or how come you didn't try it on the clean channel with a different guitar or something like that? Those are the kinds of things I do think about while I'm making the content. But as far as even doing the thing in the first place, I only do that because I want to do it. The second you let other people kind of into that space that is yours, then your ship is sinking, right? Because you will never, ever please everybody. It's literally not possible. In that, you will never please everyone with your podcast. And there was always going to be someone who's going to bitch and complain about your questions or how the guest responded to a certain thing. Like, you will never please everybody. So do it for yourself. And if you're pleased with the product, then you can ask other people to be invested in it. But, you know, if you're not going to be invested or into the thing that you're doing, then why should anybody else either?
Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted by it. I don't know if you heard my doorbell go off. I'm just going to ignore that because I'm assuming it's a delivery, not for me. So,
do you have food?
That would be not actually. No, I probably can stomach it now. To be fair, like I said, I'm very when I have a hang. Well, I'm not. I don't exactly want to say I'm hungover. That sounds so unprofessional. Literally, I had three beers.
You're hungover. It's fine.
My appetite. I don't know what it is. It just goes when I'm like some of my friends. We could go out and have loads of drinks, and they will destroy a plate of food, and I'm sat there like wilting away. Like I wish I could eat that right now, but I can't. Food.
Well, I mean, beer. What kind of beer do you like? Lager, IPA, Pilsner.
Yeah, it depends what the purpose is. if I'm drinking
general socialization.
Yeah, I like an IPA. I like something with a bit more flavor than I don't like the too fancy kind of stuff. It's expensive anyway. But sometimes a beer, sure. It's a bit like with sort of coffees or wines or stuff where you're like, this is just weird, sure. And that's why I don't feel like it's expensive because it's good. So yeah,
beer is such a heavy thing anyway, right? Like, why would you want to eat on top of that? There's so many calories and carbs in that thing. Like, now if I have a beer, I go to sleep. Like, I don't want to eat. I just want to sleep.
Yeah. No, I know.
A
I know.
Gut bomb.
Right? It was about sort of nine, half nine or something, and I already was looking forward to having a McDonald's later that evening that I knew I was going to have in like 3 hours. That's where my head was at. Right. So
I love that.
Yeah. So cool. Okay. So now that we've managed to somehow full circle it back to drinking and food, which is a wonderful conversational arc. I'm so pleased. I don't think I've ever had it go so full circle. It's so readily. And that was all prompted by whoever I missed at the door, whoever might still be there. I don't know.
Thanks, person at the door. You can go answer it. Or should we take the camera with you?
No, I don't want to know. It's like when you get a letter in the post, you're like, I don't want to open that. Like,
no.
You never letters are never good. Yeah. Like, I never... it's normally a parking ticket. Though I won a legal dispute over a parking ticket the other day, which I was very happy about.
Really?
Yeah. I say legal dispute. It's not like I was, it wasn't like, I didn't like just park on some random person's property or anything. Yeah, it was just bullshit. I was allowed to park there and they tried to, it's not very interesting.
Wow.
Anyway, that's my life story right there. So I need a question for the next a conversation starter for the next guest. A question to ask them.
A good question to ask, and this could be: is it going to be generally a music industry person, or is it going to be literally anybody?
It's going to be like a music industry person is a good way to put it. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me the biggest band you have seen in the smallest venue.
Oh, that's a good question. I know. I've had a Q&A session with Tony Iommi with about 30 people there. That's the closest I can.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I saw recently Motley Crue played at the Underworld in Camden, which I think is like a few hundred.
Uh-huh.
That would have been sick. I'd love to have been at that. I'm not even a massive Motley
Crue
fan,
I've played there. Like, how did they fit in there?
I think it was like a secret show.
What?
I don't know if they just did like one song or something. I don't know, but it's pretty mental. Yeah. And cool, I need an artist as well that you think deserves some love. Someone that maybe doesn't get the recognition that
an artist. The Home Team, dear friends of mine. They're kind of blown up. They're about to go on tour with Don Broco.
Cool.
And in the United States, they're working on a new record. Check out The Home Team. They are amazing, and they're very, very good people, and I love them.
Nice. Is there anything you want to sort of promote to the world, a plug? For your own purposes?
I have a course, the Musician's Guide to Content Creation, that I'm very proud of. It teaches you all those things that we were talking about, lighting, camera techniques, how I shoot all my B-roll. I basically make a video in real time and you get to see and figure out. I teach you how to do that in real time. I make a video, I pick a thing that I'm going to make a video about, and it's awesome and I'm really proud of it. It's hours and hours long, and that's off on my website, and I don't know. That's about it.
Nice. I have one last question from me, and it's a quick. I promise it's a quick.
Yeah.
One. Whenever I make it to the US, what should be the first thing, like proper meal that I eat? No, the first snack, and then the first. I get a snack at the airport, whatever it is, and then a proper meal. What should I go for?
Oh man, you guys have so much chocolate over there. I feel like you need something not chocolate or gummy here. I would choose. Oh, I don't know. Do you guys have get some caramels or something, or get some? I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head what you guys don't have over there, but you guys have things like Skittles and stuff.
Yeah, we have them,
right? Yeah, you got Skittles, you got Snickers, obviously. Yeah, you got Kit Kats. Yeah. A snack. What's a good snack that you could have that you wouldn't be able to get over there?
Well, Funyuns, I guess.
I feel like I guess you should get some Funyuns. Mm-hmm. First thing, your first meal should be, I don't know if it would necessarily be something you couldn't get over there. I would hit a Taco Bell right away. Mm-hmm. And get yourself a double decker taco. And then also get yourself a crunch wrap.
Cool. Okay, I can do that. It's a bit of a change from the sushi.
It's different. It's different. It's different than what you have over there, I promise you.
Mm-hmm. I've not even had one over here, so.
Okay.
Good to set my standards high. Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, it's not great food, but it's something you should certainly experience.
Yeah, high by someone's standard, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
A person's for sure. High, probably. It's probably high by their standards.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you, man.